Welcome to CME on ReachMD. This activity, Advances in Immuno-Oncology, an expert's discussion on the promises of bifunctional fusion protein, is provided by TOPEC Global and supported by an educational grant from Merck KGaA. Visit reachmd.com/io to view other episodes in this special series and to get a closer look at the newest development in cancer immunotherapy, the bifunctional fusion protein. Prior to beginning this activity, please review the faculty and commercial support disclosure statements, as well as the learning objectives. Your moderator is Dr. James Gulley, Director of Medical Oncology Service at the Center for Cancer Research at the National Cancer Institute and National Institutes of Health. Dr. Gulley is joined by Dr. Scott Kopetz, Associate Professor and Deputy Chair of Translational Research at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas, and Dr. Louise Pazarez, Head of the Lung Cancer Unit at the National Oncology Research Center in Madrid, Spain. Here's Dr. Gulley.
I'm James Gulley. Joining me today are Dr. Kopetz and Dr. Pazarez to discuss the latest findings in TGF-beta, its role in pathophysiology, and treatment advances that we hope to bring in the near future. Welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
So over the last several years, we've seen an explosion in interest in the immunotherapy for cancer. This has been driven in large part by the rapid, deep, and durable responses we've seen with immunotherapy agents, including anti-PD-1 and anti-PD-L1 agents. However, there are limitations with these approaches. Often, this is because of other negative regulatory influences within the tumor microenvironment, so we don't see everybody responding to these. One of the new pathways that is being seen to be involved is the TGF-beta pathway. This pathway is what we're going to be discussing today.
TGF-beta is a complex pathway that has really been characterized over the years by a bit of a dichotomy. A lot of the TGF-beta biology has been described in the gut, where there is an exquisite need to not overreact to the antigens that we eat or the bacteria in our gut, but to make sure that the immune system is still able to defend from the microbes that may be pathogenic. In cancer, however, TGF-beta is important for regulating the type of immune cells in the microenvironment and really helps to structure a more complex microenvironment that can exclude and regulate the different types of T cells and other effector cells that are present in the environment.
I would add that those pleiotropic effects and complex effects of TGF-beta signaling in disease lung cancer are very important. On one hand, it has relevant effect on the tumor cell, on the tumor itself, promoting invasion, metastasis, and of course, through EMT. On the other hand, it has some effect on the immune microenvironment. It has some other effect potentially which is relevant to lung cancer, which is actually promoting fibrosis, which is maybe important in the context of radiotherapy here, and particularly taking into account that at this very stage we are using some PD-1 or PD-L1 agents post chemoradiation in lung cancer. So I think that is, for a number of reasons, a very relevant target, and I hope that we are going to show that in the years to come. And very likely, intervention on the TGF-beta is going to be an important component of our therapy in the future.
That is a good point. And there are several other agents targeting this relevant target that are currently under investigation. There are several small molecules that target the TGF-beta receptor. These include galusertib, actosertib, and there is also an antisense oligonucleotide, trabertisin, that is in phase 2 testing in melanoma. There are several vaccines that are currently under investigation that actually use antisense technology to decrease the TGF-beta in the local vaccine site. There's also monoclonal antibodies against TGF-beta, like frizolomab, and this is in phase 1 and 2 testing in melanoma and non-small cell lung cancer. There's another antibody, ZOMA-81, that targets TGF-beta 1 and 2. And finally, there are bifunctional antibodies that target TGF-beta and anti-CTLA-4 or TGF-beta and anti-PD-L1 that have been tested preclinically that have been recently published. There's also M7824, which is a novel first-in-class bifunctional fusion antibody that is in clinical trials. This has an anti-PD-L1 antibody that on the tail of the antibody has two TGF-beta receptor 2 molecules.
So Dr. Pazderez, can you tell us a little bit about M7824?
Okay, so that's a very interesting compound. Actually, it's a bifunctional agent. On the one hand, it's a typical monoclonal antibody against PD-L1. It's avelumab, I would say. But it's fused to a trap, which is actually able to trap the TGF-beta. You're having this bifunctional ability to engage on the one hand PD-L1 and the other hand TGF-beta. So you're interfere not only on TGF-beta at the tumor level, but also you can intervene on the microenvironment.
So I was honored to be part of the phase 1 dose escalation study of M7824, where we did the first in human study. It was a safety study, phase 1A, where we enrolled 36 patients who had advanced cancer, a variety of different cancers. And we started with doses as low as 0.3 milligrams per kilogram and went up to as high as 30 milligrams per kilogram. And we recently published the first 19 patients up to 20 milligram per kilogram dose level. But what we found was that it was safe to give. We could see virtually the identical side effects to what you'd expect with PD-1 or PD-L1 inhibition, with the addition of keratoacanthomas, or benign skin condition. In addition, what we looked at was the pharmacodynamics, and what we saw was that not only did we get saturation of the receptor occupancy on the PD-L1 side of the molecule, but actually we also got a decrease in the TGF-beta. All activated TGF-beta was below the lower limits of detection throughout the entire dosing period. We also looked at preliminary evidence of activity, and in this very advanced patient population, with some of them treated with very low doses, we did see a one complete response and two partial responses, suggesting that there is preliminary evidence of activity there. And this led to multiple expansion cohorts. We also determined that the best dose to use going forward would be the 1,200 milligram flat dose.
So, sorry for that. The three responses you've seen, in which tumor type they were, and also they were at the highest dose level or not?
So these responses were seen at a variety of dose levels,
right.
And it wasn't just at the highest dose level. And we saw this in MSI-high pancreatic cancer.
Right.
We saw this in cervical cancer, and we saw this in anal cancer. So we did see responses across a range of different tumors.
Right.
So one of the expansion cohorts was in GI cancer. So Dr. Kopetz, could you share with us some of the data that's come out of the GI cohort that was presented at ASCO GI?
Certainly. So in GI, I think there's been two efforts. One was an expansion cohort in colorectal cancer, and another was an effort in gastric gastroesophageal. In the gastric gastroesophageal cohort, this was enrolled primarily in Asia. It's a 31-patient cohort, and encouragingly had a 19% response rate. And there was a 35% disease control rate overall. The activity was durable as well. The updates from the cohort are still a bit immature, but responders are continuing on for the most part. Toxicities were similar to what you had seen in the phase 1 dose escalation, so I don't think any surprises there. A few autoimmune side effects, a little bit of fatigue. So similarly, the colorectal cancer expansion cohort was done. And this was looking in a refractory patient population. There was one remarkable responder that was on for well over a year, and she had microsatellite stable colon cancer. This is not a very immunogenic-looking tumor, as we would classically think. But importantly, she had a subtype of colorectal cancer that we define based on RNA profiles, what we call CMS4, but really is a very mesenchymal-defined subgroup. And that's about 20% of our patients, so it's a minority of patients. But this is really the subgroup of colorectal cancer where TGF-beta is very active, where there is an engaged immune system, it appears, but it's that tumor microenvironment that is inhospitable to an immune response. So this is encouraging and is leading to expansion studies looking in CMS4 further activity.
Fantastic. So one of the other pieces of information that's emerging is in HPV-positive cancers. You can see TGF-beta dysregulation in many patients with HPV-associated cancers. So this led us to enroll patients in our dose escalation phase one study, and we're presenting 17 patients. And what we saw, that these patients had anal cancer, cervical cancer, and head and neck cancer. 12 of these 17 had known HPV positivity, 4 were untested, and 1 was negative. So the majority of patients had some decrease in their tumor, and 35% of the patients had an objective response overall. And of the 12 patients that were known to be HPV positive, we had a 42% response rate. Now, just to put this in context, what is out there in the literature with PD-1 and PD-L1 inhibition in HPV-positive cancers is somewhere between 16 and 20% response rate. So we find this early signal with limited numbers of patients promising, and we actually have a phase 2 study going on looking just at HPV-positive cancers at the National Cancer Institute. Additional data that's came out at ASCO is the data on lung cancer. And Dr. Pazarez, could you comment on that?
There is a phase 2 study where 80 patients had been included, treated at two different dose levels, 500 milligrams and 1200 milligrams total dose. The efficacy was very clear there. Overall, among the 80 patients, response rate was 23.5%. which is somehow a bit better of what would you expect with PD-1 or PD-L1 agents alone in this setting without making any restriction by PD-L1 expression. And more importantly, when you go and analyze the subgroup of patients with high dose, 1200 milligrams, the response rate is actually 27.5% as compared to 20% on the low dose, 500 milligrams. More importantly, if you concentrate on the PD-L1 positive tumors, response rate is exceeding 40%, and it's actually exceeding 70% on those tumors which are very high, with PD-L1 expression using the 80% cut point, which is actually, with this assay, corresponding to the 50% positivity with the 22-3C assay. So the data in terms of event-driven responses like PFS and OS are also pretty encouraging, I would say, even, of course, immature, but encouraging, particularly at a 1200 milligram dose, particularly on those patients which are PD-L1 positive.
Thank you very much. Very interesting data. So I think that what I am seeing is preliminary evidence of activity with anti-TGF-beta trap molecule that also blocks PD-L1 alone. And I think that perhaps we're going to see this in patients who have immune systems that already recognize their tumor, such as highly mutated tumors like lung cancer, or patients who have viral-associated cancers like HPV-positive cancer. I think also there's a potential for, as you mentioned, those tumors that are immune deserts. Potentially, one could use this and perhaps in combination with other agents to get the immune system to recognize this. And just want to mention one quick study that recently opened at the National Cancer Institute where we're combining a vaccine approach with this M7824 to see if we can get the immune system to recognize the cancer and then allow those effector cells to be functional within the tumor microenvironment. We're also adding in IL-15 and an IDO inhibitor in sequential cohorts to try and break the back, and we're doing this in prostate cancer, which is a typical T-cell poor tumor where we don't see activity with PD-1 and PD-L1 inhibition unless the patient is MSI high. So I think that the interesting thing about this approach is not just that we're targeting 4 agents that target 5 different pathways, that we're trying to do these combinations quickly to get the answer quickly to see, does this work or not? In 3 sequential cohorts, we'll get our answer very quickly. So any closing comments for our audience?
I think I'd share your enthusiasm for the target and the opportunities. I think, as you mentioned, the next wave is really understanding the right setting for agents like this that target TGF-beta. It's about kind of patient selection, understanding the biology, understanding where TGF-beta is playing a really critical role. And I think also in what combinations is a TGF-beta response counterproductive. So I think was brought up Radiation is one, and I think a lot of excitement about radiation combination studies moving forward as well. So I think this is a great example of kind of a fundamental understanding of a biology with an agent that really appears to be hitting two key aspects of tumor immunology.
I mean, I fully agree with your comments and your prospects for the future. I would say I would favor particularly on PD-L1 highs, maybe the setting of tumor which are immune deserts to see if you're actually able to get some lymphocytes inside. And also very attractive for me would be on the stage 3 setting. We are starting our chemoradiation immunotherapy altogether trials.
So we've had a insightful and exciting discussion today on the role of TGF-beta and potential opportunities to use this M7824 to target cancer. I've been delighted to be here with you both. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Likewise.
This has been CME on ReachMD. The preceding program was provided by Topec Global. To receive your free CME credit and to find other episodes in this series, go to reachmd.com/io. Thank you for listening.